Actor Lou Diamond Phillips is putting his screenwriting talents to work in his debut novel, The Tinderbox, Soldier of Indira, a science fantasy retelling of the Hans Christian Andersen tale of the same name. It is a fairy tale that tackles issues of racism, power, and prophecy in an alien world. Lou Diamond Phillips is currently starring in the Fox series Prodigal Son. He is a Tony-nominated actor whose breakthrough films include La Bamba, Young Guns, Stand and Deliver. His new novel is The Tinderbox, and we welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure to have you on the program.
My pleasure, Joe. And it's, wow, it's a round table. I'm back to my King Arthur Camelot days.
Absolutely.
Tour of that. So there you go. You know, it's full circle, as it were.
Let us begin with when you started to familiarize yourself and when you came to know of the Hans Christian Andersen tale, and then the development of saying, oh, I would like to do something with this.
Yeah, it's actually, it's a bit of found inspiration, if you will. I mean, obviously, I'd read the Hans Christian Andersen stories, you know, when I was younger, and Aesop's Fables and all of those, Lewis Carroll's, Alice Through the Looking Glass and Alice in Wonderland were all favorites of mine. But this actually happened because I met my wife, Yvonne Phillips, and she was a makeup artist. We met on set in Vancouver, and as we were getting to know each other, she was reading, some of my screenplay writing, even some of my, early narrative writing. And I was looking at her whole portfolio of artwork. And she had done a lot of sort of, this German woodcut, wonderful pen and ink, crosshatch drawings. And that was very much influenced by her growing up in Germany and listening to fairy tales from her, grandmother, her Oma. But she had also done this series of drawings in the manga anime type style. She was a real nerd in the 90s. She was into graphic novels before they became hip, here in the States. And she had done this series of drawings based on Hans Christian Andersen's The Tinderbox. And immediately, for me, it evoked this kind of post-apocalyptic, feudal, fairy tale kind of world. And when you look at Star Wars, there's a huge samurai influence in there. There's a huge Kurosawa influence. And he immediately put me in mind of that. And the original idea was to do a movie. Let's write a screenplay. Let's develop this as a film. But the more we got down the road with that, the more we realized it was going to be ridiculously expensive, and nobody was going to let me direct it with that kind of budget. So we thought, let's take – yeah, exactly, right? I mean, I'm very pragmatic with this. Just like nobody's going to give me $50 million to make this movie or more these days. We decided to establish the world more, to really own some of the authorship, if you will, and fill in the details. And so I started on a very long journey of writing the novel, which took, almost 10 years because I kept acting in between,
Right. Yeah, the day job. When you start looking at the story itself, which is I can very easily summarize into this fairy tale by Hans Christian Andersen about a soldier who acquires this magic tinderbox and then is able to summon these three powerful dogs to do his bidding. So once you have that, then you say, okay, and you went the science fiction route with this.
Yes, which was a very pragmatic approach because we were thinking about the film first. Now, the original concept was pre-Game of Thrones. So fantasy, fairy tale, that whole world was not as successful in the cinema world as science fiction was. So that's definitely, what led me, to go down the science fiction route. And once I'd wrapped my brain around that, it was like, well, great, because I really do believe that science fiction, even our modern day Westerns, are our contemporary version of morality tales. They allow you to tell, stories of human character, of courage, of bravery, of integrity. That was my setting, not to mention the fact that a background of war, like the Once and Future King or even anything Shakespeare or Aristotle has ever done, that setting of war really gives you an opportunity to look at the human condition. And if it's a soldier who's also coming of age, I mean, this really lends itself to expanding that original story. But I also wanted to lean on the kind of wordplay and the kind of whimsy that I so loved from some of that writing, from a lot of that writing of the period, whether it's Lewis Carroll, you know, or even Jonathan Swift in his approach to social satire. And so I wanted to retain not only the fairy tale aspect of the story, but a lot of the specifics, because I thought a lot of people would have fun in seeing how I extrapolated that. So there is a witch, there are dogs, there is a tree. The tinderbox really is a tinderbox. It is physically a tinderbox.
Mm.
All of that stayed true to the original story, but has been, reverse engineered into something a little bit more in the sci-fi realm.
Lou Diamond Phillips is our guest. The name of his debut novel is The Tinderbox. Let us talk about Everson. This is a very interesting character who didn't want to be a soldier. His parents say, you're going to be a soldier, and this is what you do. And so then, in his first battle, things go very, very wrong. Tell us a little bit about Everson.
It's interesting because the soldier in the Hans Christian Andersen is actually never even named. And quite honestly, he's not a very nice guy. So if I was going to spend this much time with this kind of character, especially having played a lot of, you know, heroic characters, I wanted him to be interesting. And to me, very, very much so, an unlikely hero, even a reluctant hero, is more interesting than, you know, the Terminator, you know, rushing in to save the day or whatever. Sergeant Rock or something. A lot of your Marvel characters are flawed. So when I look at that, I automatically had some iconic templates to go to. I mean, you know, obviously there's Luke Skywalker, who does not realize, you know, what his destiny is or who he is. Bilbo Baggins, you know, gets conscripted into an unlikely adventure. But even, you know, the protagonist of, say, The Alchemist, who keeps trying to steer his own destiny, but the universe has other ideas, you know. So I really looked at characters like that to develop Everson, and then even gave it because the prince and the princess are very much characters in the Hans Christian Andersen, to give it that Romeo Juliet kind of aspect to it. And when I decided to split a planet and have it drift into two different planets with two different peoples, you know, gravitating toward their own, then once again, what you have is not just a Romeo and Juliet, but almost a West Side Story feel to things. And that was an influence as well.
Were you comfortable once you say, okay, this isn't going to work as a screenplay, we're not going to be able to do this, but let me do this as a novel. Were you comfortable with that form? Did that come naturally then?
First of all, I should say that who knows, that the screenplay might come back around, although it will have some adjustments because of what the novel became.
Right.
The novel became its own creature. And when you talk about difficulties, I think that was the biggest thing, was getting that screenplay format, getting that platform out of my head and letting the novel be a novel, you know, and expanding on that. A lot of times a screenplay is a blueprint. And you have your cinematographer, your editor, your production designer, all of the actors, they have an input into this. And you're all hopefully pulling in the same direction, making the same story. But it is a very collaborative process. And as a novelist, you have to become all of those things. You know, I have to see the world through every one of these characters' eyes. And fortunately for me, having played so many characters, you know, I could adopt each of their world views. But then it became seeing it very specifically in my head, and even to the point where I could expand on motivations, inner life, inner thoughts, inner monologues, and not just depending on an actor's face to convey a lot of that, to give the reader, you know, enough of an explanation of what was going on inside these characters without becoming too pedantic about it. I mean, like I said, there's a lot of latitude for input in a movie, but there also has to be latitude for input in a novel. I mean, you have to allow the reader's imagination to see their own movie, because that's what they're doing when they're reading it, you know?
Which is, I find fascinating, because the idea, as you were saying, I mean, since you were a kid as an actor, you have been in that, you've been collaborating. So now you get to go into a room all by yourself. That must be a little freeing.
It's very freeing. And I'd say, you know, 90% of this was me and the computer, you know, or me and my notepad. But since the entire, you know, process was inspired by Yvonne's work, Yvonne was very, very much a sounding board throughout. I would read her, you know, passages, and she would give me thoughts, and she would say, you know, that's great, or I'm not so sure about that. And that was, you know, that was part and parcel of me opening up my mind and going, all right, this is not something that's iconoclastic. You know, I'm not, you know, Hemingway sitting in Key West, you know, figuring this out. And to be honest, it was humbling even after that. I mean, the first draft, you go, wow, that's it. I've done it. I've completed it. 300 pages. Here it is. You know, and then you try to sell it, you know.
Sure.
And then you get notes from the agent, and then you get notes from the editor and the publisher. And so it really was about approaching it in the same way that I approach, say, especially directing for television, you know, and I've done a bit of that, and I'll be directing an episode of Prodigal Son this year as well. But that is, you have to accept the input. What is the tone? What are the beats? What, you know, what are we trying to establish here visually? And to have enough of an open mind and set my ego aside and listen to some very, I think, diverse but valid opinions. I have to say some of the thoughts and some of the notes made me adjust the story in some very, very positive directions.
What do you, I assume you're enjoying the process of Prodigal Son?
I absolutely love it. I mean, I have been really blessed. I mean, there are very, very few times where it's been a struggle. Being on set is one of my favorite places in the world. And I've often said it, even on the films that didn't turn out great, I've never had a bad day on set. You know, I get paid to act. I mean,
right.
It's, you know, I really have to approach it from that point of view. You know, gratitude is the attitude, as they often say. But it's extra special when you have a cast as talented and as lovely, and there are no divas, you know, in Prodigal Son, very much like my experience with Longmire. But also to have, you know, writers like Sam Slaver and Chris Fedak, who are such collaborators. They're so available. They want to hear your thoughts. They welcome your notes, of which there are very few, because what they usually pass us is, you know, pristine. So it's, you know, and it's fun. I mean, like the novel in many ways, it exists on so many different levels, this show. Yes, it's a cop procedural, but it's also, you know, a mystery, and it's dark and it's twisted, but it also has this ridiculously edgy sense of humor. So there's so much to enjoy about these characters. You know, I've always approached television work very, very carefully. Because in success, you're going to get stuck doing it for a long time. You know, you could do multiple seasons of a job you don't really like, and that's not something I ever looked forward to doing. So whenever I have auditioned or I've chosen, you know, television series work, it's always been because, all right, I could do this for a while.
Well, and the worry also is that, yeah, if you do it for a while, then you get into that, that becomes how you're identified, which I think is interesting when it comes to you, because your earliest work and the film that was the breakthrough was La Bamba, which of the 15 people in this building right now, when I said I was going to interview you, everyone said La Bamba. So that still follows you.
And that's okay. I mean, I'm eternally grateful for it. You know, I mean, it was my Cinderella story, my absolute breakout, and it's evergreen. I mean, my goodness, Netflix just put it back in rotation a few months ago. You know, so now I have 8-year-olds screaming Reggie at me. You know, but it holds up. You know, it was not of a time. I mean, because it was a period piece to begin with. It's just as relevant, you know, now in 2020 as it was in 1987. And the fact that it's, you know, it's about, you know, the American dream. It's about, you know, an ethnic community taking their seat at the table. And that perhaps is even more relevant today, you know, than it was then.
Actor Lou Diamond Phillips is our guest this morning. What does it do, given that you are a Filipino-American actor, and you will play a Mexican-American, a Native American, you even play the King of Siam. So how do you look upon that? And from your own personal point of view as getting these incredible roles, but also as what Hollywood does as far as its casting, especially when it comes to people of color?
Yeah, that's a very complicated question. I'm such a mutt that, you know, I am not authentically one thing or the other. People ask me what I am, and I will often say I'm an American. And, you know, anytime I'm giving advice to young actors, it's like, you know, hone your talents. Don't hone the hyphen. You know, it's be the best actor that you can be. There are certain roles that you won't be right for, but there are many, many roles that you can. And in looking at the great, you know, variety of roles out there, everybody should be given a shot. One of the greatest compliments I ever got, one of my earlier films that I actually wrote, Ambition, but I did not direct. My co-star was Cecilia Peck, and I had a wonderful dinner with her father, you know, the incredible legend, Mr. Gregory Peck. And one of the things he said to me was, you put me in mind of my friend Tony Quinn. You know, and that's, you know, that was a huge, yeah, man, that was such a huge compliment to me, because Anthony Quinn was really the pioneer in the kind of thing I do in my career. And that is, Anthony Quinn played, you know, Mexican-American, but he also played Native American. He played Greek. He played, you know, Inuit. I've sort of done all those things myself. And in doing that, in accepting those roles, I always know that I am representing a community. And I try to do it with respect, and I try to do it with dignity. Early on, you know, they said that I was an honorary Mexican, which, you know, I mean, to me is a huge compliment. And so whether it's representing that community or the Chilean miners in the movie I did, The 33 with Antonio Banderas, which was the most international cast I've ever been in. You know, you got Gabriel Byrne playing a Chilean. You've got Juliette Binoche playing a Chilean, you know, in addition to, you know, Mexicans and Cubans and Chileans and Colombians. You know, it was wonderful. But I've always tried to be authentic and to go to the source. I mean, especially, for instance, when I'm playing Native Americans. And, you know, because of that, I've been adopted twice into Native American nations. Once, you know, with the Lakota people after the Young Guns films. And I went up to, you know, the reservation of Porcupine into Rosebud and did ceremony and was given a name. And the same thing happened with Longmire, where I went to the Lame Deer Reservation in Montana and was adopted and given a name. So I'd like to think that what I'm putting out there in representing the different communities is appreciated. Now, we've gotten to a place in our society and in Hollywood, thank goodness, where they're much more cognizant of being authentic, of trying to cast and not whitewash nearly as much. And as a result, I mean, we are seeing actors of color breaking through. I mean, the African-American community has, I think, you know, really led the way in making noise and being recognized. But, you know, we're seeing the Asian-American community, we're seeing the Latinx community come forward. And there are dozens more men and women of color getting roles now than they were when I started back in 1986.
When you go back to the novel, you tackle some of these issues of racism and power within the novel, too. It gave you an outlet to explore some of this.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I mean, first of all, they say write what you know. And so there was, you know, my ability to put myself into Everson's shoes or King Raza's shoes, and hopefully I'll get to play that when the movie happens. But, you know, because I'm playing dads now, Joe.
That's where we are, and that's part of our life, Lou, I think.
Exactly. But once again, here we go. This is part and parcel of my philosophy and what I've always said. Whenever I direct there are certain roles that I look at in a television script, and I think, you know, people think that the director always has the last say. Not in television. That's not the way it is. Maybe in film. But I said, well, you know, can we see actors of every color for this? Can we see, members of the LGBTQ community? Can we open this up? And I've often said, to make a real difference in Hollywood, we are going to need, you know, directors of color, writers, you know, of color, producers, people who bring a different perspective to the table and therefore will be much more inclusive and representative of what the American fabric is. And I think in television, we're starting to see television look a little bit more like America. And so if I'm going to create something myself, then it's going to have an inclusive aspect to it. And that's why half the characters are brown, you know. Mm. And what I love about this is that they're endearing, you know, that you cannot actually go, okay, well, I'm going to see actors, you know, only Latin actors for this or only Asian actors for this. It's wide open because it's out in space and you can't tell me that the actor isn't this or that enough.
Well, the new book, it's a really incredible novel. It's called The Tinderbox, Soldier of Indira, and it is just out. Lou Diamond Phillips, thank you very much for spending time with us. What a treat to have you on the program.
I really appreciate your time, Joe. Thank you so much.
Wish you all the luck in the world. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the novel is The Tinderbox, Soldier of Indira by Lou Diamond Phillips. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.